we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Frankston Times, read by Neil Sleet.
For sale, tombstone, standard grey, a goodbye for someone called Grady.
And our thanks to Victoria Dissel for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Carrie Quinlan. And opposite them on my left, Sue Perkins and Andy Hamilton. Jeremy, who kept changing their mind about regime change?
This is Sir Peter Goldsmith, a former Attorney General, Lord Peter Goldsmith, who he's the second hottest ticket this week. Blair is Friday morning, and we won't know quite how revelatory that has been. The problem is, this show is recorded. Like all the News Quiz shows are recorded on January the 1st and then distributed throughout the year. Which means, for the most part, we don't know what we're talking about.
I was thinking about that because I was thinking perhaps we could record a variety of responses so that we can edit it, you know, both ways. So I'm going to start off. I did think it was terribly obliging of Tony Blair to turn up with a full written confession and already wearing his prison uniform.
We do know what Blair will say. He will say that, you know, whatever you may think about the prosecution, the war, and the basis for going to war, the world is a better place without the repressive regime and the presence of Saddam Hussein. But by the same logic, official government policy should be to invade China and assassinate Piers Morgan. So
the second hottest ticket this week was Peter Goldsmith. Now, I don't want to impugn a man's integrity, but it does seem that in a period of days, his advice went from "That'll be against the law," to "You might get away with it," to "Go, Tony, bomb those falafel biters into the dust."
He's only reinterpreted two or three words from the UN resolution, those three words being "no" and "cause" and "war."
And he also said that the thing that swung it was that Jack Straw told him that confidentially the French had said that they wouldn't be too bothered if there wasn't a second resolution. He thought, since when has a point of law been decided by the opinion of the French? It's law, isn't it?
Some extraordinary stuff has come out. Jack Straw said that he often ignored legal advice when he was Home Secretary and had gotten away with it. And I thought, well, if you can't play fast and loose with the law when you're Home Secretary, when can you? It's an extraordinary admission.
Yeah, yeah. The extraordinary bit in Goldsmith's evidence where he said he went to Cabinet and said, well, I've come to the conclusion that on balance the war probably is legal. And he said nobody in Cabinet asked him a single question.
What a fine collection of inquiring minds.
Yeah. not one question, not even, have you got any biscuits? Nothing.
Why are inquiries always named after the person in charge? Do you not think it makes it sound like a Sunday night detective drama?
Chilcot Inquiry does sound like something on UK Gold with John Nettles in it.
Yeah. But they're not exactly balls of fire, are they, the inquiring team? I mean, they are deferential. They're like something out of a 1950s Pathé News, aren't they? Fantastically. They should have had Paxman in there. And, you know, you need someone who is going to say, oh, come on.
You want someone who's basically quite inquisitive by nature.
Yes.
I think you should have Paxman on one shoulder and you should have John Humphreys on the other, just shouting into each ear until they just basically lose the plot and confess everything.
Yeah, and then bring in Jeremy Kyle just to finish him off.
Just to do a paternity test.
I think they should do it with a panel of five-year-olds, so no matter what, anyone answers. But why?
Well, in the week in which Tony Blair finally faced the Chilcot inquiry into the Iraq War, former Attorney General Lord Goldsmith admitted that he twice changed his mind before finally giving the legal go-ahead for war. Lord Goldsmith has denied claims that Number 10 ever pinned him to the wall. Well, it's a ridiculous idea if you think about it. Without a backbone, he'd have just slid down anyway. The war has so far cost British taxpayers over £5 billion. If you want to put that in perspective, that'll buy you one speech by Tony Blair. So, 2 points to Jeremy. Carrie, now, I have to say, I think this question was probably written for a man. Is that a 0.1% growth in your pocket, or are you just pleased to see me? If you could do it as if you were a man, that would be helpful to me.
She says that to everyone, Carrie.
I tell you what it is that we did have a couple of complaints. I'll give you a flavour of it. Your last episode featured an intolerable amount of incomprehensible female squealing.
Oh, my God, that is so unfair. I can't believe they said that. That's awful.
The male panellists hardly got a word in. In future, let's please have fewer women.
It's the battle cry of so much of the BBC's media output.
I couldn't be heard over the noise of clashing knitting needles. It was dreadful.
Talk to me about 0.1% growth in your pocket.
It's the recession.
Yes.
What is no more?
It's over.
It's all over. Whatever that means. Because everything I've read about the credit crunch or the recession, if you're being a grown-up about it. Over the past year and a half, I read the first sentence and the rest of it goes, blah, 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 blah. The Times really has gone downhill.
Apparently there have been 6 shrunken quarters. And do you not think that's the problem right there? Surely.
I'd raise the alarm if any of my quarters shrunk.
Apparently it's the worst recession since the war, and I thought, actually, not much has really changed since the war. We're still at war, for someone. Yeah. Everything costs a fortune, and last week the council took my railings for a Chinook, so...
It's going to be an odd-shaped Chinook, isn't it?
Yeah. It is hard for the Tories now, because Labour's nicked all their stuff. We've had a terrible recession, we've had so many wars. I mean, Labour's been responsible for more death than the Tories could hope to achieve, even if their plans for the health service were put into operation.
Labour must be pleased, though, about the recovery in the housing market, because, you know, Gordon and Alistair, they'll be looking for somewhere in the summer, so...
Well, the Tories are thrown by it, because everyone thought it was going to be 0.4, and they were going to say, good, we'll have a bonfire of public spending on the basis of this huge upswing in the economy. And now they can't. They've realised that cutting everything will plunge the economy into a double dip, which is where you put the carrot in the falafel after you've already bitten a bit off. Yeah. Recession.
Does that mean that basically George Osborne will actually have to do something if they get in? Because he's basically banking on the fact that we'll be well on our way to recovery and they can just slash public spending. But actually, if they can't stop quantitative easing, there's no joke coming, by the way. I should have had this conversation with Jeremy backstage. It would have been far more interesting and engaging. We could have cracked on with some material here.
Can I just repeat, in future, let's please have fewer women. Can I just say that? The UK has scraped out of recession because the GDP has increased by 0.1%. GDP is a measure of output. Apparently, we've been working harder over the last quarter, mostly clearing snow, I think. 2 points to carry. Sue, who thinks we are sailing towards a safer society?
Ah, this is my favourite plasticized cartoon character, David Cameron, who, well, he needs basically to find 1,000 extra prison spaces to honour his pledge, he's got a twofold pledge, firstly to end the procedure of early reform, and secondly to clear up banking. So 1,000 extra spaces are required, and what better way to do this than to come up with the notion of floating porridge? So prison on the high seas. It's basically Con Air sur mer is what you'd be looking at there.
Why don't they have prison planes?
That would be good.
Just turn all modes of transport into detention centres. Yeah. Have prison unicycles for the really dangerous ones who need to be in segregation.
But that's David Cameron's considered response to what we do with crime, put them in the English Channel somewhere.
Apparently his cabinet didn't know about it.
Their reaction is whatever he says, they go, oh, no. David, darling, you don't understand this lovable Muppet figurehead role we've created for you. He's like one of those people who's won a part in a crowd scene on EastEnders in a charity raffle and turns up on the set having scripted some lines for himself.
Yeah.
He doesn't realise they just want him to stand there. Yeah. That's all.
You know they always say about how prisons, they get criminals in and they make them into bigger criminals. Imagine if you've got a pirate on board a prison ship. Come off as Bluebeard, it would be... Actually, it'd be a great way to lure pirates, wouldn't it? And surprise them. Why don't we send all the prisoners on prison ships to Somalia?
Yeah.
And then
get
lure
the shock
them.
Of their lives, yeah. Aren't they?
I think they should just bring back Jane McDonald, and that would certainly act as a, you know, people say, I'll never offend again. Don't send me on that cruise ship.
Make the prisoners listen to really crap entertainment.
Now we've got Foxfire and the dancers from Leicestershire.
prison is a bit like that, though, I think, because you said yes in the audience.
Yeah.
You do get ropey entertainment boarding, because I used to do that when I was a student. We used to go to prisons, and we did a sketch called Crime of the Day, which was like Match of the Day, where you had analysts reenacting
this
crimes.
In a prison?
Yeah, yeah. No, and we did the sketch, and it ended with a slow-motion flasher. With Brian Clough analysing his technique. And he got this massive ovation. And I was talking to the chaplain afterwards. I said, that sketch went down very well. He said, yeah, well, most of them started their prison careers like that, yeah.
What, most of them started as Cambridge undergraduates doing weak sketches?
David Cameron has backed prison ships as a way to ease overcrowding. Britain's last prison ship sank after two inmates tried to tunnel their way out. Tell you this. Last week, I was really pleased to tell you that Britain's top judge is called Judge Judge. OK, made me really happy. This week, I want to tell you that the director of the Howard League for Penal Reform is called Francis Crook. Just need a bystander called Terry Witness. Francis Crook described prison ships as an expensive waste of time, forcing Cunard to change the slogan on their winter brochure. Andy, who might put down their arms for a free handout?
Do I get a question about the Taliban? Thank you very much.
Good luck.
No, they're renowned for laughing at themselves. Well, we've got this new policy now. There's two elements of the Taliban. There is the Islamic fundamentalists who founded the Taliban, and then there's a lot of tribesmen who the Taliban keep on side through a mixture of sort of patronage, favours and money. And I think someone in the West has thought, ah, we've got money. So the idea is that we resolve the moral issues of the conflict in Afghanistan by bribing people. I think they're likely to say, yes, I will have the money, thank you, and then just pretend to stop fighting you for a bit. I mean, I'm not a tactician. But I think it's rather like, you know, bankers are expected to ask themselves the question, do I deserve a bonus this year? I think I do.
Apparently older fighters are going to be offered pensions. And you think, oh, that's all you want on a Thursday, isn't it? You're stuck in a post office queue behind Osama bin Laden droning on about the war.
In bin Laden's next video from his cave, he's going to be demanding cold weather payments, isn't he?
And behind him, you'd just be able to hear, cashier number three, please.
It would make it easier to catch.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's all a ruse to lure Osama bin Laden out into the open.
Flushing.
They tried telling him he'd won a scratch card the other day. That didn't
work.
To bring the Taliban on side, they will have to relinquish the gains that have been made in women's rights. Because people who support the war keep saying, well, it's turned out well, the war, because there's been major advances in women's rights. You think, well, yeah, that wasn't the intention. If that's happened, that's collateral feminism. It's like saying, well, I know we bombed that wedding party, but it turns out they weren't ideally suited for each other.
Improved women's rights. I mean, shocking. It's shocking. So did you know, this is really bizarre things that the Taliban have focused on. They've banned sewing magazines. Now, how many subversive samplers are there?
I tell you, some cross-stitch can be well seditious, I tell you.
Gordon Brown opened the International Conference on Afghanistan by unveiling the creation of an international fund to pay off the Taliban, the biggest example of rewarding international terrorists since Tony Blair's book deal. Round one, I can tell you the scores are Jeremy and Carrie have got 4 points, but in the lead are Sue and Andy with 5. Mm. We start round two with an advert spotted in the Daily Mail.
Premium cruises across America's coastline, slide through the icy glaciers of Alaska, party at the sands of the Caribbean, and wet yourself across the beaches of Hawaii.
Is that incontinental holidays, is it?
Thanks to Pippa McLardy for sending us that. Jeremy, who's right-wing and yet right-on?
Oh, they've done a social attitude survey, which they do every 20 years or something, to find out what people's social attitudes are. And they're finding that, on average, the British population is more liberal, and the biggest change is in the over-60s, who are much more liberal than they were 20 years ago. And you think, yeah, that's because a lot of the over-60s weren't over-60 20 years ago. They were young and progressive. The point is, although people are more progressive and liberal on social issues and matters of gender and sexuality and so forth, they're much more right-wing in terms of economics. 20 years ago, most people accepted that people on benefits were genuinely on benefit, partly because 20 years ago, everybody on benefit had, until very recently, been working in our successful manufacturing industry. But you'd think in the middle of this recession, people would be a bit more forgiving, realising that a lot of people on benefits did have jobs.
So how does that work? If you're more liberal in your social attitudes, but you're more right-wing economically, does that mean you go to a gay wedding, but you take a very cheap present? Is that the sort of thing?
It's the worst, isn't it? The worst combination possible. Because if we're socially more tolerant but politically more conservative, that means we've got lots of ideals, but we're not prepared to act on them. Mm. So we're kind of just a nation of, we're hypocrites, really. Peter Mandelson must have read that and thought, my work here is done.
Well, it's New Labour, isn't it? Actually, there were some very interesting statistics. 11% of people believe that hell exists, and interestingly, they all live in Croydon.
Twinned with Mordor.
Before we get letters, it is Sue's place of birth. It's yours.
Yes, I really, my entire life was an effort to get out of there, and now I have.
That's the one-way system for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
The annual British Social Attitude Survey has revealed we have become more socially liberal but more fiscally conservative. 26% of people surveyed said they believed in God. 13% of people said they did not believe in God. 61% believed you should stop ringing me up and asking me stupid sodding questions. I do love all these statistics. 40% of people believe that mothers shouldn't work full-time, and I think most mothers would be happy not to work full-time. And until the self-feeding, self-cleaning, self-dressing child and husband are created. Carrie, have a listen to this.
Hey, you get ready, get on your feet, get into gear and hit the street. That's you that we want to see, so get down to 73. Get down to 73, hey, you get down to 73.
I remember.
I was just 2 years old. Who was that old little lady? The one from Denmark.
Yes.
What happened to her?
Tiny little thing. She couldn't see over the city.
I think she was a puppet.
That was the theme tune to a children's television programme that I presented for 6 years.
Was it you, Sandy?
It was me.
Sandy, were you also the murderer in the red duffel coat at the end of Don't Look Now?
And R2-D2.
Don't you start, Hamilton, or I'll...
Ewok fight!
Carrie, why shouldn't Square Eyes watch with Mum?
Is it about children's television?
Yes.
By any chance? This is Lord Fowler, who is Norman Fowler, who is in charge of some report that the Lords did about television and children, and or television generally. But one of the things they came up with was there's too much American television for children. And that's a dreadful, dreadful thing. Not like in our day when we watch British things like The Lone Ranger and Mickey Mouse and Flash Gordon and Sesame Street. It's not American television for kids that's the problem. It's that there isn't very much kids' television. Because when you turn the telly on a Saturday morning where once upon a time there'd have been a lovely Scandinavian midget to entertain you, you now get the Saturday Kitchen. If they did the sandwich quiz, that would be worth listening to. Can you do the sandwich quiz intro,
Sandy? I don't know if I can remember.
Yeah, you can.
This was a quiz I did every week, and I used to introduce it by saying, so, the daring, dazzling, death-defyingly dull, devastatingly dangerous, delectable, delectestable, divinely decadent sandwich quiz.
Yes! The sandwich quiz, though, was the best quiz of all time. It was at the end of the show, and there'd be this quiz, and Sandy would be in charge. And if you got a question right, you got to make a sandwich, and whoever had the biggest pile of sandwiches won the sandwich quiz. That, my friends, is a sport we can be proud of.
It was the most extraordinary programme there, because we had all these very famous people, and I remember playing the sandwich quiz with Elton John and Susie Quattro.
Is that a euphemism?
Yes.
Sandy. Apparently, you did a children's show which climaxed with the children getting as many sandwiches as possible, and we now have a nation of obese children. Yeah. Is there any, do you think there's any connection between those two things?
Don't think I don't hang my head in shame. The House of Lords Committee on Communication has recommended that more of the licence fee should be spent on making homegrown children's TV. One of the most popular kids' shows is In the Night Garden, in which Macapaca, Iggle Piggle and the Tombly Boos play in the Ninky Nonk and the Pinky Pot. I have no idea what I am saying. In other news, Thomas the Tank Engine is coming back. Hooray! He was due to come back last year, but got caught up in...
Shame on you. Shame.
Engineering works near Crewe. Sue, who wants to check one is fit to carry on, Doctor?
Ah, yes, this is our Health Secretary, Andy Burnham, who decided to look at the example of Captain, I think it's Sellenberger, the famous aircraft pilot who landed the jet engine in the Hudson River. The captain had said, basically, that he made many deposits of learning through his years flying, and then on that particular day made one enormous withdrawal. That's how he put it. And
I would have thought
Mr.
he made an enormous deposit.
Yes, you'd think so. On that day, you'd think, fair enough. Mr. Burnham has now decided that he wants to use this principle, basically, with doctors. He wants doctors to go in and basically fill out a form to make sure that they still have the requisite skills and the requisite engagement with their patients. They'll go into a room, presumably they'll be sat down, and a man will say, hello, and the knee bone is connected to where? There'll be multiple choice, you know, when a patient comes in, do you A, put down the golf club, or do you B, roll your eyes for 2 minutes?
I think it's a good idea, because I look at the health service and I think, you know what this needs? Another layer of administration.
Yeah. Bureaucracy.
Yeah.
I do think a bit of skill development is a good thing. I mean, my GP, slightly out of touch, he has a notepad sponsored by Lambert and Butler, and I just...
Do you think that plane really was in trouble? Or do you think he's a very experienced pilot, he's flown over the Hudson thousands of times, wondering, thinking, I bet I could land it on there. And he was coming up to retirement, wasn't he? He thought, oh, sod it, I'm going to give it a go. Hey, look, it's all blue and shiny. It looks lovely. I just...
For the first time, doctors and surgeons are to have their skills assessed on a regular basis to ensure they are still competent. Doctors complain that the tests are unnecessary and will make the job even more stressful. One complained that just thinking about being tested caused a strange salty liquid on his palms and a quickening of his red pumpy thing. Andy, why is waste a sign of the times?
Yeah, yeah. This is from the University of Pointlessness somewhere. It's that you can tell a man's age from the height of his waistband, because teenagers wear their trousers sort of just above their knees. And as we get older, we eventually end up the full Clarkson.
I'm sorry, Andy, I can't hear you over your belt.
Yes, men's waistbands creep higher and higher and higher as they get older.
So do they not die of old age? They suffocate through the crotch.
But when you're a baby, your waistband's quite high, isn't it? When you've got a
Yeah, because
on.
Otherwise you can get a chill on your kidneys. Yeah. That's what my mum used to say. Pull your trousers up or you'll get a chill on your kidneys and that'll put someone's eye out.
They say that the watershed is 57. By 57, the belt will have reached the highermost point. I don't know
57.
Who's been measured by 57. Wow, Andy. Wasn't
I've actually got
that.
A belt because I've got elasticated trousers. Which is what men in their 50s really wear, so we can put it where we want within reason.
A study by Debenhams. Oh, heavens. Oh.
Scientific
positive. Study by Debenhams.
They're moving into research then, aren't they?
They are, very.
Yeah, they're in charge of Britain's nuclear programme as well.
Two for one. Study by Debenhams has found the position of a man's waistband is a clear indicator of his age. Up to the age of 12, boys wear their trousers around their waist because their mum buys them. By 16, boys buy their own trousers, so they're 5 inches below the waist. By 27, the waistband is returned to the waist. At 39, the waistband rises until it peaks at 57. 5 inches above the waist. Surely at 57, the bit between your gut and your man boobs is your waist. At 75, trousers back round the waist, as presumably they're once more bought by relatives. That seems to be the...
That was the seven ages of trousered man.
Very quick extra point. Did anybody see something unusual or read something unusual about a man in his underpants this week? It was my favourite story of the week.
Was it Jeremy?
No, I'm going to give myself a point. German Hans-Kurt Kubas has been jailed for 14 weeks after attempting to board a plane in New Zealand with 44 geckos in his underpants.
Wow.
The Telegraph described the pants as hand-sewn, and you think, oh, since CNA closed, it's so hard to get gecko ready-made smuggling pants. It's... Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Gabriel Weber of Kingston, and it's from the Jewish Chronicle Online. There are no longer automatic knighthoods for those who might have expected to receive them simply for doing their job. Leaders of professional bodies, chairs of large companies, or permanent secretaries in the civil service, said Sir Gus O'Donnell, the Cabinet Secretary.
Ms. Quinlan.
This is from Sean Murcutt, and it's from the Hereford Times, and it's from the advertisements in the Hereford Times. 16 pre-used Quality Street sweet wrappers. Assorted colours, but all the favourites, may exchange for good condition roses wrappers or similar. Re-advertised due to time waster.
Ms. Perkins.
Can't beat that, I don't think, but Mrs. Michael Harris sent this in from Truro in Cornwall, God's own county. And this is from a very heavy science magazine that he came across. And there's some biographies here. This is one of Scott Pitnick. It says, Scott Pitnick is professor of biology at Syracuse University in the US of A. His main scientific interests are with sexual selection. He's also currently exploring the sociological and pop cultural relevance of sperm. He wears his science on his sleeve.
Hamilton.
This is from Roland Jagged, and it appeared on page 101 of the Radio Times under the listings for the channel More 4. 9 o'clock. Embarrassing bodies. The team visit Wales.
Score. Jeremy and Carrie have got 12 points, but this week's runaway winners are Sue and Andy with 14. Here is a cutting from the Crawley Observer sent in by Sue Freeston.
A locum doctor who lost confidential patient's notes in a service station toilet on the M40 is due to face an internal investigation.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Carrie Quinlan, Sue Perkins and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news is read by me, Neil Sleet. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Roger Crooks and Lucy Clark, with additional material by Andy Walton, John Luke Roberts and Gareth Wynne. The producer was Sam Bryant.